Hell yeah, baby. Week two of the 5-10-5 show, where Coach Justin Lima and myself dive into the strength and conditioning side of Division I college football. We talked the summer program last week, and the summer leads into fall camp, which brings a whole new host of challenges and obstacles in the strength and conditioning world. We're going to talk about that right now. Let's go. Back for another Friday 5-10-5 show. We're in the real studio today, Justin. You see the overlay?
This is nice.
I'm pumping the Dr. Justin Lima Twitter and Instagram accounts.
I appreciate that. And I'm back in my studio, so the audio will be good. I was on the road in Massachusetts last week.
Oh, you were?
I was, yeah.
What were you doing?
Visiting family and doing some work out east.
Okay.
Doyle and I are both from Massachusetts. Like, that kind of helped me with my connection of getting hired during my internship, plus having the Frazier connection.
Where's your accent?
Don't have it. I mean, I'm an immigrant. Like, or not, I personally am not, but my dad's family, he's an immigrant from the Azores, which are the Hawaii of the east of Europe, because it's the islands outside of Portugal. So he came over here when he was 10 years old, never really picked up an accent, just kind of.
Okay. Because Doyle, he didn't really have one either, but you could tell he was from.
Yeah. Like, and I, you know, my wife will, like, if I say margarita or like certain things, like it comes out.
Margarita.
And if when I'm home long enough, like it comes back out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When you're around family. Yeah. Okay. I get it. All right, cool. We're excited to have you back. We're excited for all season for this. This was well received in week one. I think you saw, I saw you interacting with a couple of the comments. We got several on the YouTube, and then obviously several on the social posts for this. There seems to be at least a small contingent of people who are like, oh, I like this. This is exactly. So that makes me feel better for having the idea. At least a couple people will listen. I know we got at least 500 views on the YouTube video last week, and that's usually like a minority percentage of how many people actually listen to it on the audio platform. So we're reaching some people, and I think we can do good things here. Last week, if you didn't catch up on last week's first episode, we talked all about the summer program. What is the point of summer? How do we get these guys ready? How do we integrate freshmen? All these different things. Today on the show, we're talking camp, which is, or maybe a week late on that, because I think they finished up camp last week, maybe this past week, and they're obviously in game week now. We'll talk about game week next week. How do we work around camp, Justin? How do we do this? This is, along with spring ball, probably the most saturated time of year as far as guys getting work done with the staff, with actual football stuff. Like, even once you get into the season, you don't have quite the workload purely football as you do in camp, because now you've added school and you have to pull back on some things, and you can't kill everybody. We probably could have done an entire show on the, I don't know if you saw this. Is it Charlotte has 9? You didn't see it. Oh man, we're going to take a quick tangent. Charlotte's head football coach, in a cutoff, by the way, he looked like me at the press conference, comes out yesterday and says, yeah, we're dealing with 9 starters are hurt. They won't be available for the first game. And he like totally took full responsibility. He's like, you know, we're playing, I think they open up with JMU, who obviously had, they've had an incredible couple seasons, and have had a lot of fanfare recently. And so like Charlotte's like, oh, we gotta get ready for these boys. It was either Charlotte or Chattanooga. I don't, it was one of the two. And in the midst of that, they ran their guys into the ground. They're down 9 of 22 starters. So this begs the question, how do we approach camp? And this is maybe partially a position coach, head coach fault there. I'm sure the strength coaches were just sitting there going, oh my God, what are we doing? But like, you know, we've come out of summer now. We're supposed to be conditioned. We're supposed to be ready for camp. How do we approach camp from a strength conditioning perspective, like big picture?
Again, going back to what you talked, we talked about last week, it's that head coach, position coach interaction. And for us at Iowa, we were very fortunate where there was periods of time during skills and drills where the coaches wouldn't be out there. So it would be on myself, Doyle, Ray, Joel, Cody, Nick, we would all go and we would be teaching and doing the things that we needed to do when the position coaches couldn't be outside. Hey, what are drills that you do when you're not allowed to be out there? We're going to respect the fact that we can't have footballs, but we can do things that look, smell, and feel like football. So I literally would go and have a meeting with Coach Wallace or Coach Reed to be like, hey, show me your things that you do, because I have 30 minutes and I want to make sure that I'm doing what you do. So when you're doing that and you're integrating with them, like literally so much so to the point that 2014 during bowl prep, Jim wasn't able to be at practice because he was somewhere else. And during warmup, Doyle was like, hey, you're taking Indy for the inside linebackers. Like, ask Cole Fisher and Tyler Perry about it. Like, or Travis Perry, like 100% happened. So when you have that level of communication and everybody knows what's going on, and when you have a continuity of a staff that has been together for a while, you know, like, okay, this is what's going to happen for that, you know, first practice, second practice. And that's where you have that ramp up period, because you understood from the conversations in the summertime, this is what's going to happen. Now, everybody in strength and conditioning knows practices 1 and 2 are going to be the hardest, because position coaches equate no pads with easy practice. So they're going to make the guys run more. And that's where, as a strength coach, you have to know that going into it. So you make them run more at that week 8, because, oh, you're not hitting, so it's not a hard practice. But when you look at player load, it has player load, high speed distance, whatever metric you want to look at, it's always the highest, because coaches, again, they equate, there's no hitting, there's no equipment, this has to be an easy practice. Yet when you look at the metrics, it's always one of the highest.
Damn. I didn't even think about that. I knew. So again, this is fun for me to listen to it come from you, because that's not something I ever thought about. Cause like, I'm not running routes, dude. Like, no, I'm not like the load, there was no, I determined my workload. Right. Like, I mean, great. Like, yes, I, as a specialist, we did tackling circuit, you know, yep. we had our special teams periods. We had whatever we were doing with you guys, as far as the strength and conditioning stuff, but there was no fluctuation on, by the time we got to the season, there was no fluctuation on actual, position specific volume. I got up to the volume I needed by camp. And then when we got, and it does taper off when you get into the season and you have to be healthier, you have to pull back a little bit, but it was just even. It was either even or less. And so I never had any of those things where it was like, oh, first couple days of no pads, like that means I'm doing 50 more snaps today. You know, like and so I've never really considered it to be, and you're right. Like, and I think this is one of the things, again, probably another whole episode, the disconnect between the perceptions of the head coach or the position coaches of what their practice schedule is actually doing to the players physically and what it actually is doing to them. Because you guys get to see that. Let's explain this. Why are guys running around in bras? Why do guys got bras on?
Oh yeah. Cause was it Dunker? He was running outside and he had the bra on. I mean, the linemen wearing it, not necessarily needed. Like we started with linemen. At first it was just Sheriff and Carl. I think Louie had one on too. And then eventually, like cause I was in charge of the GPS data. So we've had GPS I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, you were. Iowa. You were always at the computer, huh?
Yeah. So Iowa, was in charge. We had GPS dating back to 2013, back when the company was called GP Sport. And eventually that company got bought out by Catapult, the company now. And the easiest way to think about it back in the day was Mazda and Infiniti, same company. A Mazda is a lower grade car technically, but same thing, same process. That company, Catapult, they now have like a lower tier product called Player Tech. Anyways, players are wearing that because that harness, when worn with we called it a harness instead of a bra because we didn't want the players to like not want to wear it. We were just trying to be very like, please wear this, because in 2013, we were one of four schools wearing it. It was LSU, Florida State, Oregon, and Iowa. Like, so we were pioneers in 2013 wearing it, having the HRV heart rate stuff to, you know, your iFleet that you used to have. Like, we were pioneers with that. And guys are wearing it with the harness, so it's the most accurate measurement of movement that is occurring on the athlete. Forward, backwards, right, left, rotational, up, down. And that way there's no longer like, oh, I think this. Like, you have a new offensive coordinator coming in, a new wide receivers coach. What other coaches are new on staff right now?
I think that's it for this year, but like new-ish, we have, you know, running backs coaches.
Running backs coach, Ledette, like, so all of them, right? And so you've got, you know, 11 to 12 coaches, all that have, oh, well, this is my opinion of what a hard practice is. And this is my opinion of how hard. And it's like when your plane crashes, it has your black box of like, this is exactly the data that happened. Yep. Same thing. When the GPS report gets downloaded, it's like, hey, this is valid and reliable because there's been so many, like Catapult is not just some random company. It's validated and reliable data that tells you like, hey, this is how much movement a player had, this many yards. You can set the high speed distance based upon that athlete. So instead of like, oh, Tyler Kluver covered, you know,
not very much
distance. Well, like the whole point of it is like, hey, Tyler Kluver covered X number of yards greater than 16 miles an hour. Well, what is 16 miles an hour to Tyler Kluver? Is that your 80%? Is that your, like, what is that? That could be 90% if you're slow. So you can set it to be certain, like you could dive and get super bored with all the data, or you can just be like, hey, this band represents 80%, 90%. And then now when you're sitting at that staff table, I'm not like, oh, well, I think this about practice. Right. No, y'all can think what you want, but here's what actually happened from the, you know, numbers. And then we can talk about how you feel about it. But hey, I also, as a strength coach, we collected session rating of perceived exertion, SRPE. And now it's like, hey, well, this is what happened. Here's your thoughts. And here's what the players thought. Where's the disconnect?
Yeah. And the implications of this are for the listener at home. And Justin's awesome because he gives all of the, like the terminology and the lingo. One critique of last week's podcast was like, oh my God, this is sick. But on some of this stuff, can you like explain the terminology and the lingo? So we will try to be better at that. What he just said there was SRPE, session rate of perceived exertion. If you're familiar with like the RPE scale in general, just in like if you were going to go to the gym and you're going to do a set based on RPE, it is just how did you feel? It's a way for you to describe in a number form how you feel about your exertion or how hard you had to work in a certain set. So the SRPE for a player would be, you know, I come off the I come off the first camp practice of the year as a long snapper, and like all of a sudden I had to do tackle circuit and I had to do a punt period where we did six full covers, meaning in each rep I actually had to run the 40 yards down to the returner and act like it was a full play. I had to do you know, like Doyle was just feeling spicy that day, so he's like, screw it, Kluver, you do linebacker indie today just for no reason, whatever. And I come off and my SRPE is like, damn, that was a 9 out of 10. Like that was, I was hurting there. And then the coaches have their idea of like, oh, what was the RPE of the players today? But the problem with that is the coaches, and this gets back to the initial question of disconnect between the actual data and how the coaches feel, is the coaches, even in their own position group, have 15, 20 guys to look after potentially. If you're the line, they don't have eyes on every single guy. They don't know exactly until they go back and look at it how many reps each guy got, because practice is fast moving. Sometimes guys get hurt. Now a guy has to do a whole period that they didn't expect him to do. So a coach could come off the field and be like, I don't think Riley McCarron really ran that much today. I don't remember him running that many reps. But then you look at the data, they come to you guys and you're like, well, no, he ran 10,000 yards today. Like that could be a number. I don't know what the high is on receivers and DBs for how much they're running. And so not only can they see volume, but then that knowing what percentage for an athlete that is, like you said, is 16 miles an hour. Like how much did he do at 80% today? How much did he do at 90%? How much was he actually like at top end speed sprinting? Because if you've got a guy now, so again, back to the implications, now you're like, day two or day three of practice in the middle of a week, or you're a week later, you're like, why is this guy dragging ass? You go back and look at the data. Oh, he's ran way too much above 85, 90% in the last 7 days. We got to pull this guy back. And so the bras, the harnesses that these guys are wearing, I know the public always is, it's hilarious to look at these big 300 pounders wearing essentially bras. It's for the GPS data. That video of Dunker was incredible, by the way. He is majestic.
Yeah, he is a majestic human being. And I'd also interject for the listeners, GPS can also tell you to practice harder. Because on the flip side, you can be like, hey, sure, a Riley McCarron might have gotten all that work because he's on punt, you know, because Seth puts him on as a gunner, or he's returning kicks, whatever. But it also will allow you to be like, hey, you know what? Like, we've been running a ton of 11 personnel and our tight ends haven't done anything.
Yeah.
And if we don't prepare them, they're going to be slow come game day because they haven't been exposed to it. So it allows you to be like, hey, we need to do more because they've done less. Or, hey, let's pull back, because at the end of the day, what's it about? Winning games. It's about winning the game on Saturday and giving yourself the best ability to do that. So you got to be fresh and tactically prepared. And this just helps you be fresh.
And you guys had... So those harnesses were worn during the summer, right? A lot of those guys are wearing that during the conditioning.
All the time, unless it was like, unless we're lifting, because it can't tell you, like, that GPS monitor can't be like, oh, Tyler Kluver had 450 pounds on his back, or he was body weight. It just knows that there was displacement vertical up and down.
Yeah, you guys have systems and tendo units for that kind of stuff to measure in a different way for the actual weightlifting stuff. That's a whole nother episode. God, I just need to start writing down these episodes. The more I do this, the more excited I get, because there's so much to talk about. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we've established, okay, we can see what these guys are doing workload wise, volume wise, and we know why that's important and the implications of how a coach and a strength staff would now go about changing things to be better about it. How do we know? And I think I know the answer on this, but how do we know coming out of summer that these guys are prepared for camp? And I have a feeling that the answer is, well, we have a general idea of the workload they need to be doing to be prepared. We have past results of, hey, they were this, they had done this much. They won games last year and did well. We need to get them to that level again. Are you comparing that data from the summer then? And going into camp knowing, okay, or is it as easy as like, hey, they all passed out of the four quarter conditioning test. We know that they're ready. How do you guys look at that coming out of the summer into camp?
You'll look at the GPS data from the, 8 week summer. And then you'll also look back at like, okay, what'd we do in spring ball going into it? So you want to see your systemized, okay, week one step climb up for about 4 weeks, you deload during the week of 4th of July, and then you ramp back up. So your graph should look up, goes slightly down, and then right back up. And then that eighth week, it should be your total game week volume needs to be higher than what that first week of camp is going to be. So you're able to, again, project it out. And especially when you're working at a place where the head coach has been there for so long, sure, offensive coordinators are going to change, but you still understand a rough idea of what those weeks are going to look like. And that's where, again, you take the statistics of, all right, we did – whatever the number is in week eight, and then you start to project out, okay, our hypothetical model of what week one, two, and three is going to look like. Because when you start collecting all that data, what you're able to do with Catapult again is like, hey, coach, you want to design practice. Cool. What period are you going to do? When you're tagging everything, all right, we're going to do 9-on-7, 7-on-7, punt, we're going to do inside run, blocking, and all the things. You can build out what practice is going to look like, and then it'll give you a hypothetical model. So during the summer, you're planning and you're like, all right, coach wants to do this week one, week two, week three. This is what those practices are going to look like. We got to make sure that we're covering it. Mm-hmm. So you have that analytical data side. And then you also have the fact of you're having weekly and daily conversations with coaches. Hey, how's this guy look? How does that guy look? Again, not to mention the fact that you've introduced skills and drills in that July portion. You know the conditioning that you've done. So you have that qualitative subject of talking with the players, talking with the coaches, but then you also have the data to be like, hey, we've done the thing. We know that they've sprinted, changed direction, all the main metrics. Because, yeah, I'm not looking at practice like, oh, okay, did Riley McCarron, did Luke Lachey, is that how I pronounce his name?
Yep.
I'm bad at English.
Yep.
So did Luke Lachey, does he know how to run the route tree? No. But I look at, okay, did Luke understand, like, can Luke change direction 45 degrees down off the right leg, left leg? Can he do it off of 90 degrees right and left leg, 45 degrees right leg up and down? Like, that's what I'm looking at, and I'm calling that explosive efforts. Hey, did he do that number of explosive efforts in the summer to get ready for camp?
Yep.
Cool. And then not to mention the fact that you have exit interviews with the players at the end of the summer to ask them, hey, how do you feel?
Yeah.
And you're just always talking with them.
That's a good segue, because the next question I was going to have was, at a high level like this, there's a lot of, you know, even as a team, we used to do like a pre-mortem. I think Doyle had us do that. Like, and it was more of a cultural thing.
Yep.
Like, hey, what are the things that could derail us this season? Anything. And we would just throw out an idea. I remember the meeting. He's like, anything that comes to mind, just throw out an idea. Because then if you can project that, and you can try your best to come up with every single thing that could go wrong, then you can put actions in place or be mindful as you start to work into it to make sure those things don't happen. At the end of camp, does the strength staff, I imagine you do, does the strength staff sit down of, you know, when we were there, Doyle and you five, and you sit there and you go, hey, what went well this summer and what didn't?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you have that kind of meeting. And then I imagine that also that affects the next summer. Like, hey, we're going to operate a little differently next summer. We're going to put that away for, you know, next May or June when we're kind of getting into the following year. But I imagine it also affects, you know, what didn't go well this summer. How do we buffer that as we get into camp? Because we could have been better here. Is there a meeting like that where you guys sit down and you guys almost give like a post-mortem or a pre-mortem?
1,000%. And what we do is at the end of every phase. So at the end of the winter phase, at the end of the spring phase, the summer phase, and the in-season phase. So there's four phases essentially for us. And we would have a form that was structured like, hey, 10 questions of what went well, what didn't. Again, same thing. Like, what would you have changed and why? And like DeMarco and my thing, because like that was my thing. Like I had no issue, and neither did Nick, of being like, hey, because Doyle's thing was like, listen, if we're going to disagree, we disagree in this room and we need to disagree. And then when we leave the room, we're united.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember one time laughing about like some of the changes that I proposed when I was at Maryland. I was like, man, they were pretty radical. Like as just a young assistant, like, man, I was suggesting some stuff. And he's like, listen, that is your job as the assistant. As the head guy, it's our job to decide whether we keep it or not. So we would come up with, hey, this was good, this wasn't good. And that literally that document, we'd all submit it, and then we'd have our time to individually think about it. And then we'd pull up our, you know, literally what we thought, and we'd go around the room and talk about it. And then that would then get digested for what to do next phase. And then that would also be part of the planning, because in that same meeting or in a different meeting, we would meet every single week. Okay, hey, here's the lift card. Here's our plan. What should we do? How should we change it? You know, look at the next 4 weeks. We'd always be trying again, be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah. I wish I could have been on some of those meetings. That would have been
some of them were long, and some of them were a little too long, and some of them were like, hey, you know what? Like, this was exactly what we needed. Like, I think about when we were implementing the slight edge stuff, it was like, those were some of the longest, but like most invigorating, you know, good meetings.
Yeah. Final question, because I'm curious about this, is KF obviously head man. And then it goes to the position coaches as we get into this sort of camp conversation of, okay, we're getting down to crunch time. We got 2 or 3 weeks. We need time on the field. Like the priority now is time on the field. Was it difficult? Did Doyle ever, or did you guys as a staff always feel a little bit of pressure to like push back on, okay, we've got this camp schedule. KF is going to set how many practices we want, how many we want in pads, all this kind of stuff. How do we fit camp lifting, camp training into the schedule, and how much do we do? Talk a little bit about, you know, now we're having to manage the workload of football and how that changes, how the training changes during camp.
So at the beginning, at the beginning of camp, it's all about camp. So you're really just supporting that, and kind of the way that we would do it is we microdosed it. As you started to see, it'd be like, hey, we would do just a little bit every day before practice to get you moving.
Yep.
And that was our way of addressing it during camp. So if you're practicing 4 days in a row, we'd probably go with a lower body movement, an upper body movement, lower body. And again, truly just 30 minutes, but move you, get you ready to go and practice was kind of our thought. But then as camp winds down, it's actually a lot more seamless than people might think, because as you said, this is week one, but in terms of strength and conditioning, what we always, this was our transition week, understanding that it was still, we were transitioning from camp. And so this week was is a normal game week, but the week before was a normal game week in terms of Thursday's going to be off. We're going to lift, you know, the same schedule that we had, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, like whatever it was. And it would just be at higher volumes, higher percentages, because there is no game. There is no school. We can push those things. And the quicker you can get into that game model, so the athlete is used to the stressors of wake up, practice in the morning, and getting the athlete on that thing that is called the morpho cycle design, right? The weekly cycle, which DeMarco has talked on before and talked inside of Strength Coach Network on, is getting the athlete on that morpho cycle schedule. So that way they're used to it. Sure, you're not going to play a game on Saturday, but that's when you see the scrimmages. So you're just getting the athlete acclimated to all the things. So that way when they go to school, all right, it's school, but that's the only new thing that I've done. So that's where you'll see the traditional lifting of, you know, what we used to do. But in the beginning of camp, yeah, you're micro dosing it. You're trying to hit those qualities that we talked about last week. Hey, let's still touch on some strength qualities for tendon health. Let's touch on the dynamic effort. The one thing that was always difficult to do, and that I started to get a really good grasp on at Towson, was hitting the posterior chain work. And that is for anybody, glutes and hamstrings. And you want to make sure that those stay robust to the demands of football. And to me, the best way to do that was in camp, when you're practicing in the morning and coming back to lift in the afternoon, once you can't do the double sessions, you would always hit your posterior chain work really, really heavy, the eccentrics, whatever you're going to do. You do that on the day before an off day. So that way they can recover and you've still given them that stimulus that they need to be able to recover from.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, two cliff notes from that as we finish up the podcast there, I think that are important as far as the in camp lifting is that you basically have to go away from any like CNS heavy, like those workouts that you wake up the next day and you're like, oh my God, my body clearly isn't going to work right today. You have to go away from those, any high volume, crazy stuff. And you have to focus on those more dynamic efforts, especially because now you're getting towards where you're going to be using those a lot more, like sprinting, cutting, reactionary stuff when you get into the football. And then, I guess another takeaway from the listeners is like listening to you there is basically you guys are super important again with the morphocycle stuff of you guys are really like, hey, we need you to implement routine. You guys have to be a very solid anchor of getting these guys into a routine. Even though you're just the strength conditioning side, you guys have to be implementing that routine so that these guys, once we hit game week and school rolls around, are psychologically prepared and kind of phased into, okay, every day is regimented. We're bang, 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 bang. And that is a huge part of really just success as a student athlete. So awesome. Well, we could talk for 2 fucking hours on this. But that's it. I want to keep these to around a half hour. Thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys for listening to the 5-10-5 show. It's Friday when you listen to this. So we are about 24 hours away from Hawkeye football. It's very exciting. It's very exciting.
Feels good.
And hopefully with Illinois State tomorrow, we can handle business. We can stay away from injuries, although they are part of the game. So now that we're into game week and we're going to have some games out there, people are going to get dinged up. That will be a large topic of this show as well. But we'll take that as it comes. All right. For Justin and myself, 5-10-5 show, we'll be back next week. We'll talk then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.